Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and the political events that are occurring. Some of the things that we'll be discussing today, this Friday, yahoo, TGIF, March 15th, 2013. We're going to be talking, well, we did talk about how the U.S. Is going to pay down the national debt, but we also had some questions that came in that we will be answering about how the federal government still had control of the land within the borders of states. So we're going to be talking about that, so make sure you stay tuned, and we're also going to be talking about a depression. So lots of things to talk about, and let's get started. Gold today. It touched 1600, 1592, up $1.30. Silver touched 2914, but is settling in at about 2884. Platinum was up 5 at 1595, and you have palladium up 2 at $778. USDX today is up 0.05 at 351, and you also have crude oil still trading higher, 0.45 at 93.48, and I believe that's on the basis of war drums. Yes, war, W-A-R, drums that are beating. And I think that's probably some premium in there for crude oil. So don't get comfortable with those gasoline prices dropping a few cents of late. I'll guarantee it'll be back up very heavily in the next few. The markets today, didn't follow them. A lot of light trading. You know, everybody gets all excited about all the Dow points, you know, and hitting highs and so forth, but very light volume on these trade days. Of course, the biggest volume is coming from your U.S. government. The Dow was down 24 points today at 14,514. NASDAQ down 10, 3249. S&P down $2 at 1560. The 10-year yield, it's floating at 2%, and the euro is still at 130. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Give us a call, Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Make sure you visit our website, DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter, American Survival, and, of course, if you're listening to this program in other ways, you can also listen to it from our website, dgscoins.com. So lots of reasons to go to the website. And if you need information on how to begin purchasing gold and silver, you'll find that information at the website. No, we don't post every item that's available on the website. We're not an online seller of coins. We don't have 100,000, you know, every single little bar that you can find posted on the website. We have the most popular items, and you need to call us for an update on the pricing. We choose to speak to our clients. We want more than just prices slapped on the website, and you get to pick and choose what you want. So we're here for your questions. We're here to help you, and we're here to help you make an important decision when you're turning in those worthless dollars, almost worthless dollars, into some real currency. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody. Our dollars are not worthless, but they are increasingly worthless.
Increasingly worthless.
Yep, that's what it comes down to. Again, back in the day, it took $35 to buy an ounce of gold. Today, it'll take $1,600, thereabouts. Point being, the value of your dollar has diminished by something like 97%. All right? It's not completely worthless. It's still worth maybe 3-4 cents compared to what it was back 40-some years ago. But think about that. You know, this is not a small thing. Some of you were putting money into Social Security 40 years ago. And you are just now reaching a retirement age, beginning to approach a retirement age. Guess what? The dollars you put into Social Security, you gave them a dollar. And there was those dollars are now worth about 3 cents apiece. When they return them to you, when you get your Social Security, guess what? You gave them dollars that were worth 100 cents each. They're going to give you dollars that are worth 3 cents each. You have been robbed by inflation. It's been slow, and it's been persistent. And as a result, you are going to suffer. You have lost assets. You have invested your money with the government. The government has robbed you. And that's what inflation does. You know, and then the lesson in this, the absolute obvious lesson, if you don't want to continue to be robbed, you need to put your wealth, you need to store it in media other than paper dollars. You need to put it in something like gold or silver or land or tools or who knows what. There's a bunch of things you could do, but for liquidity and for ease of use and concentration and privacy and a bunch of other reasons, gold and silver are pretty close to the to the current ideal. So what else we got, Melody?
Well, we were talking the other day about how the U.S. could pay off the national debt, and we had a listener sent us an email about, please tell how it is that after the states west of the Mississippi became states, how the federal government still had control of the land within the borders of those states. That is not what happened in the eastern states.
That's true. And again, this is a reference to an observation that the federal government owns half the land thereabouts west of the Mississippi. In theory, that land should be owned by the individual states, but the federal government keeps it. They declare it to be national forests, national parks, whatever, but they are holding that land. They would say that they're holding the land for the benefit of future generations, but we are in difficult and challenging times right now, and that land could be used to pay off some of the existing national debt. Instead of imposing higher taxes on today's people, we could go after that land. The listener is asking, how is it that the states west of the Mississippi lost control of their land to the federal government, and it was simply it was the agreement that was reached when these territories, territory of Montana, for example, when it became a state, government said, okay, we're going to let you be a state, but we're going to keep this amount of land. Now, they didn't do that in the early states. And the earlier states would be the ones closest to the Atlantic coast. Didn't happen that way. But it did with the later states out west. Part of the reason for that, there are undoubtedly a number of reasons. Some may be sinister. Some may be, you know, innocent. One of the reasons may be that the western states are so much larger than the eastern states. My recollection, and I don't know this to be exactly true, but I think it is, I think for a territory to become a state, I believe they had to have a population of at least 50,000 people. And when the majority of the 50,000 people petitioned the federal government, said, okay, we want to become a state of the union, then the government had to let them become states. But I believe the number was 50,000. It might have been 25,000, but I think it was 50. If you put 50,000 people into a small area like Vermont, for example, all of those people have, they are close enough, because the size is so small, they are close enough to have an awareness of each other, right? But you put 50,000 people into a state the size of California, and they could go through their entire lives and not see anyone else. The state is so large and so massive, and the point I'm trying to get to is this. You get 50,000 people and say, okay, we want to become a state, and the Fed says, okay, we're going to keep half of California for ourselves. Well, the 50,000 people don't mind. They've got so much land available out of just 50% of the state of California, they don't care if the feds keep the other half, and they might even welcome it. They might sit back and say, well, I don't want to be responsible for paying to take keep track of all that land up there in the mountains and on the, you know, on the east side of the Rocky Mountains. I don't want to worry about that. I just want to get myself a little place along the beach here and do some surfing. They weren't doing surfing, of course, when California first became a state, but they wouldn't be as concerned in the larger states with a comparatively small population if government kept part of the land as they might be in the original states. Another point is that even a justification, perhaps, for these larger states, from the perspective of the East Coast, you can take these larger states. California could easily be comprised three, maybe more, maybe four of the East Coast states. In theory, then, California could have eight senators, if it was broken down into, say, four separate states. They could have eight senators. By being a big, large state, California, Nevada, Montana, and so on, they would have less representation in the Senate proportionally to what you see on the East Coast. The East Coast might have said, we'll just give these pioneers out here in the on the West Coast, we'll give them big states, so they'll have relatively few senators. The net result, in any case, is that the government, and it isn't right, the land should have been given, all of the land should have been given to each state as it became a state. Nevertheless, the government kept much of the land, and that's an asset. The government could now sell that land. They say, look, we're broke, we need some money. Okay, if it owns a big chunk of land in California, why not sell that land to the state of California or sell it to the people of the state of California? Not to foreign corporations, but make it available for the people that are there. Why does the government have to keep that land? It's a good question. There's lots of justification for it, but in the final analysis, it isn't right. They shouldn't have had access to half the land west of the Mississippi and been able to keep it. So I'm not sure if that's my opinion. I'm not suggesting that it's God's truth, but I'm saying that seems to me to be a semi-credible explanation as to why the government owns all that land. Does it seem credible to you, Melody, or incredible? Or
Well, it's interesting, and, you know, it makes you wonder how in the play some of the Indian reservations came, you know, that might have had some sort of play into that. And also, I mean, you had Mexico that went clear up into, what, Utah? And
no, it actually extended, originally it extended
pretty far.
Texas. Texas, when it broke loose from Mexico, actually extended all the way up to Oregon.
I knew it was quite north.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was pretty amazing, and then, of course, they just said, we don't want to take care of all these people in Oregon and the rest of that, so they just broke it off and So, yeah, okay, so Texas will just be this much, but the rest of it became territory to become states at a later date.
So I don't know if that has anything to do with it and so forth, but a lot of that land is inhabitable.
Inhabitable, uninhabitable.
Uninhabitable.
I understand. Well, you know, I mean, you get enough people, you can inhabit the moon, I guess. But, you know, one of the things about this is when you put a country together, that country is assembled in a way that is kind of fast and loose. There are a bunch of things that if we went back and we said, well, how did these states get added to the Union? And how did these, where did these territories come from? There are a lot of questions in American history that are answered by saying a couple of guys got together over a quart of scotch and they decided, let's do this. And it wasn't exactly legal and it wasn't exactly lawful necessarily. It was, they put these things together, you know, on an ad hoc basis. They put it together, they made it work, it turned out good and the rest of the sort of thing in many respects. But you look how it was actually assembled, it might not inspire, it might not inspire the idea that the whole thing was lawful, legal, and fully above board. There was always people taking a shot. Let's try it. And we see that to some extent even today in Congress in different ways. They become creative in a way that is often contrary to the Constitution. They stretch it. They say, it can fit this way. It could mean this. I think we can try it. Let's try it. And they do. So it's human nature. And it's like all governments. Ultimately, they are based on human nature. We have a constitution. We have documents and the rest of that. But we also have people. And sometimes those people are intelligent and ethical and honorable. And sometimes, well, they're members of, I could name one political party or the other. And either way, I would offend some people and delight others. You know, sometimes they're honorable, ethical, and noble, and sometimes they're Democrats. Or sometimes they're honorable, ethical, and noble, and sometimes they're Republicans. Got that human element. And it always puts a spin on things. It's unpredictable. It's self-serving. It's often not too bright. And somehow we have to learn to work with that. Even when we, you know, you like to think that, well, I'm pretty smart and I'm honorable and ethical and noble and the rest of that, but the rest of these people, no, the truth of the matter is we are all subject to a certain amount of stupidity and avarice, who knows what else. And somehow we have to try to keep track not only of others, but keep track of ourselves. And to the extent we can succeed, we can hold together a pretty decent society. But when we let that break down and we allow people to become, you know, act out in ways that are not noble, not honorable, not working for the best interests of most of the people, we pay a price. So I guess we have to learn to keep ourselves, hold ourselves together, and behave ourselves. And we also have to insist that other people, particularly those in positions of power, behave themselves. And that's where we've been derelict, and we are vulnerable to paying a price if we don't get our public servants under control. We just might pay a very serious price before this is all over. George Washington said, "Government like fire is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. He said that the best you ever get out of government is a dangerous servant. He was saying, don't trust these people as far as you can throw them. And I don't. Many of you do. But most of you don't. Most of you are like me. You don't trust the government. We'll talk more about that later in the program. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, here's Melody to tell you about the special du jour. What do you got, Melody?
Hold on. I'm having trouble with my microphone. We're going to continue. This is, probably won't do it next week. We'll see. Very popular special AU $5 Liberty gold pieces. And of course, $40 face value of 90% silver, quarters, and dimes. And we're going to, even though prices have been up a little bit, we're going to extend the prices for the package $2,020. $2,020, that is two of the AU $5 Liberty gold pieces dated prior to 1907. They got almost a quarter ounce of gold in them, and $40 face value of 90% quarters and dimes. And the total package includes all your shipping costs is $2,020. So they can give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
All right, what's next, Melody?
Prior to the break, you were talking about how Americans distrust the government, and the poll that was recently released, three-quarters of Americans distrust decisions made by the federal government, a number that has been steadily increasing throughout the last two administrations. And at its highest point, which occurred during Obama's first term, 80% of Americans lacked faith in the federal government. So it kind of makes you wonder what changed from the that point to make it 80% to have it drop to 73%, because things are far worse today than they were then.
No, but they've got Obama phones.
This is true.
Yeah, as long as the promise of Obama phones is alive and well, some people have confidence. They have trust in the government. They're going to give me a free phone. I haven't got my Obama phone yet.
No.
I'm wondering, is it, you know, when I was a kid, they'd make these phones, these communication devices, and they might have a face on it, like Mickey Mouse or something like that. I'm wondering if the Obama phones kind of have a, if they're shaped in Obama, in the shape of Obama's head, maybe they have large ears protruding out the side or something. Do you know if that's true or not?
I haven't seen one, so I do not know.
Okay. You're right, though. They are, and this is not a small issue. Judy Woodruff was on PBS recently, and she was talking to Andy Kohut. He's the director of Pew Research Center. And Pew did a study recently in Calca, and they discovered that 75% of the American population no longer trusts the government. Actually, it was 73%, but they're just using 75 as, and those surveyed blame, they primarily blame members of Congress. Asked if the political system can work, 56% that responded that lawmakers are the problem, and only 32% disagreed. A majority of people think the federal government threatens their personal rights. That's not me speaking. This is from Judy Woodruff when she's talking to Andy. This is from the transcript of the interview where Judy Woodruff is interviewing Andy Kohut. And Judy Woodruff says, a majority think that the federal government actually threatens their personal rights. And Mr. Kohut responds, he says, yes, we have, for the first time since we've been asking this question, we have a majority, 53%, saying that they feel personally threatened. Their rights are personally threatened by government. Now, this is being led by a trend among Republicans, especially conservative Republicans. Among conservative Republicans, that percentage is 76% who feel threatened by the government. Part of the point to all of this is that when, if we were talking about another nation, if President Obama was talking about the government of Russia, or the government of Germany, or China, or any other government you care to name, and he said, we have evidence that 75% of the people in that country no longer trust their government, we would all sit back and say, uh-oh, that government's in big trouble. You can't have that many people distrust the government without some sort of trouble almost certainly following. It may simply be that there's going to be a dramatic change and a lot of incumbents are going to be thrown out in the next election. It may be that we can anticipate demonstrations or rioting or whatever. Hard to say, but when 75% distrust the government, something's going to break. Now, part of the reason nothing's happened up until now is because most people, the majority, 75%, 3 out of 4, I don't trust the government. I don't. Personally, I haven't trusted the government in years. But I have felt, most of that time, I have felt to be in a minority. I didn't expect that I was part of a majority. I knew, well, yeah, I distrust the government, but that's just me. I thought, well, most other people, they trust the government. This study from Pew Research Center, this that calculates that 75% now distrust the government, it makes me realize, my gosh, ha, all this time I thought I was a minority. Turns out I am in the majority. I'd say that's the first time probably in my lifetime I have actively sat back and said, well, I'm in the majority. I'm not even sure if I care to be in the majority, but here I am. Maybe I feel more comfortable in a minority position than I do in majority. But point, if you distrust the government, it's time for you to realize that you are not isolated or alone. You are not an oddball. There's nothing wrong with you. In fact, the majority of Americans agree. And when they say they distrust the government, again, 53% actually said they feel personally threatened. Their rights are personally threatened by government. We're talking about the right to keep and bear arms, for one thing. That would be one example. But government seems determined to intrude on everything we do. We've got Mayor Bloomberg in New York trying to regulate the size of the soda pop you can buy. What's wrong with these people? There's got to be a point in time when someone realizes that every jackass who manages to get himself elected to a legislative position or an executive position, it doesn't mean that they are entitled to implement every damn fool idea that they can think of. Somewhere along the line, somebody's got to draw a line and say, okay, enough, we're not going to make any more laws, we're not going to pass any more of this stuff, and yet they seem compulsive in their need to make more laws, more regulations, more whatever, and support bigger and bigger government, and with it, as government proceeds along this track, American people are becoming increasingly distrustful. I think it's a good thing. In fact, I have argued for years that it's un-American to trust the government. Now, a lot of people would say, well, that's a crazy idea. It's un-American to trust the government. Yeah, no, really, seriously. I would argue, I do argue, that to be a good American means to live in harmony with the spirit of the Constitution of the United States. Who would argue against that? Who would say, oh, no, you're living in harmony with the Constitution. That's not evidence of being a good American. That's crazy talk. No, it's not. It actually makes a lot of sense. A good American would be someone who lived in harmony with the fundamental spirit of the Constitution. Who can effectively argue against that premise? I don't think anyone really can. They can debate it or doubt it, but I don't think it can be successfully defeated in argument. So what is the spirit of the Constitution? And I would tell you that the great genius of the American Constitution is that it is an anti-government constitution. Virtually every other nation that starts up, the first thing, there'll be a revolution, a new nation begins. The revolutionaries enact a constitution, and the constitution gives all power to the revolutionaries and allows them to do anything they want to do anytime they want to do it. All right? That's what the revolution is all about, and the first thing they do when they gain power is they put in a new constitution, says they get all the power and they get to control everything that's going on. When our founders defeated England in the American Revolution, and they ultimately enacted a constitution. They enacted that there was a Declaration of Independence first, and then the Articles of Confederation, and then the Northwest Ordinance, and then the Constitution. But when we enacted the Constitution, it was a brilliant and almost unprecedented document because it sought to limit the powers of government rather than expand them and enshrine them. It said, all right, we understand. Government is a necessary evil. We've got to have it. But we're going to have as little government as possible. We're going to have as much freedom as possible. And in order to maintain our freedom and our liberty, we are going to restrict the powers of government. And we'll do it by means of the Constitution. And they did that. It's the reason we have three branches of government. We have a legislative branch, an executive branch, and a judicial branch. And the reason that we have, and this is this three-branch system, we refer to it as separation of powers. And the idea behind separating the powers into three distinct jurisdictions is that no one person can gain enough power in government, can concentrate all three powers under one roof, in one set of hands where they can rule like a dictator or a king. It's part of the reason we separated into three branches of government, because the founders didn't trust the government. Huh? They didn't trust the government, and therefore they divided the powers of government into three branches. It's the reason we have checks and balances in the Constitution. The founders didn't trust the federal government. It's the reason I've talked about this. I believe I've talked about it on this program before. The Bill of Rights. The purpose of the Bill of Rights is found in the preamble to the Bill of Rights. You can go up and Google this. Google preamble to the Bill of Rights. And you will see that you'll see that the purpose of the Bill of Rights, according to Congress, when they first proposed what became the first 10 amendments, they said the purpose was to prevent misconstruction or abuse of the powers of the Constitution. It's there in the preamble to the Bill of Rights. You can read it. Purpose is to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers. That's the actual words, and they are referring to the powers of the Constitution. Who has powers under the Constitution? Not me, not you, not the English if they care to invade, not the Indians if they care to attack, not the Red Chinese, not the ducks, not the deer. The only people who have powers under the Constitution are the officers, the elected officers, the appointed officials, and the employees of the federal government. The Bill of Rights was intended to protect the people of the states of the Union. That is exactly what's being implied by the preamble to the Bill of Rights. It's intended to protect we the people against the federal government. What's that? It means that the founders didn't trust the federal government as far as they could throw it. They wanted to be defended against it. That's what the Bill of Rights is, to protect us from abuse of power by the federal government. It's simply another indication that the founders did not trust the federal government as far as they could throw it. And I'm going to argue that, therefore, that's part of the spirit of the Constitution. It's an anti-government document. Yes, it created government. It created a national government. It gave them certain powers, but it essentially said, we don't trust these people, and we're going to limit them, and we're going to keep an eye on them, and we're going to try to limit their powers as much as we possibly can. So, it's interesting to me to see that here is Pew Research Organization, and they're coming back and learning that, oh my gosh, 75% of the American people don't trust the government, just as. This is consistent with what we saw in the Constitution originally. People didn't trust the federal government. Right? We're getting back to that. This is not necessarily a bad thing. We are at a critical moment. And I'm sure government is more aware of this than the average person. We're at a critical moment where we can see some very serious trouble come our way out of the government. We see the government doing its level best to try to deprive us of our right to keep and bear arms. We see the government buying over a billion, I think it's some reports, 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition for domestic consumption, for lack of a better term. I mean, that's scary. We've seen a report, 2,700 armored personnel carriers are sold to the states in the last little while. That's a 2,700 armored personnel carriers. Really isn't a lot. It translates into, what, 25 per state or something like that. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal, but government keeps pushing us in ways that do not inspire our confidence and, in fact, have caused 53% to feel personally threatened by the government and caused 75% to distrust the government. And I have to say, I'm glad to see those numbers. I am delighted to see those numbers because it indicates that the people are not brain dead. They get it. They understand what's going on. Sometimes it feels like the American people just don't pay any attention, and yet the poll indicates, yeah, they are. They're paying attention. They're not necessarily doing anything, but they are paying attention. And it means that there is an audience for the kind of information and attitude that we present on programs like this, and there are people who are prepared to agree with you if you distrust the government. If you find the government personally threatening, guess what? You're in the majority. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival. I'll be back in about 3 minutes. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here at Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, give Melody a call, 1-800-375-4188. Last segment, we were talking about public distrust for government. And a study by the Pew Research Organization that indicates 53% of the people in this country feel personally threatened by government, and 75% of the people distrust the government. Now, it's important for you to understand that, because we are at a critical juncture in American history. And every one of you, I'd be very surprised if anyone was listening to this program who didn't suspect that may be true. We are at a point where we, the people, are facing a possible major confrontation with our government. And our government seems bent on reducing us to the status of subjects, treating us, and treating us as animals. And a lot of people say that's crazy talk, but I've been sued by the Attorney General of the state of Texas for $25,000 per day, $9 million a year. I've been sued by the Attorney General of Texas under a lawsuit. When I read there, I was the seventh, the last of seven defendants added. And this case started in 2001. I was added in 2006. It involved the manufacture and distribution of a controlled substance. Right? And the controlled substance was colloidal silver, which is an inexpensive antibiotic. It's not heroin or cocaine or marijuana or any of that, but it's the same drug law. And they sued us civilly. And I was just the fiduciary for a trust that leased some equipment, some couple computers and tables and desks to a corporation that manufactured colloidal silver. I was a defendant. I read the relevant law. Turns out the drug laws presumed the people to be animals. And we found this at the federal level and the Texas level and five other states where we looked. It is probably a fundamental presumption across the country. The government presumes you and me and your children and your parents to be nothing but animals. I drafted a religious freedom defense. And pointed out that on the sixth day, God created man in his image and gave man dominion over the animals. And therefore, as a Christian or a Jew, I can't be subject to laws that presume me to be an animal without violating my freedom of religion. And the net result was that the government just dropped the lawsuit. They just dropped it. First three defendants had spent $160,000 on one of the best law firms in Texas to defend them against these charges and got nothing. They went nowhere. I'd put up a freedom of religion defense, and they dropped the lawsuit after this. The attorney general had spent 6 years and nearly $500,000 in pretrial hearings and investigation, and they dropped it because they didn't want to confront. They didn't want to publicly confront the idea and the evidence that the government regards us as animals. So they just dropped the suit. It's almost unprecedented. But this is important information, and it's important because reducing people to the status of animals is one of the eight stages of genocide. You can go to an outfit called genocidewatch.org on the internet. And you can find a document on their website entitled The Eight Stages of Genocide. And any one of these, the law on genocide is if you commit any one of these steps or stages, it by itself, even if no one dies, it is an act of genocide. The government, turns out the earliest instance we could find of the law where the government had defined the people to be animals, goes all the way back to 1906, Pure Food and Drug Act. To the best of my knowledge, I'm the first person first layman to read the relevant law and realize the spiritual implications in 100 years. Your government has been treating you as animals, presuming you to be animals. Not our declaration started out with we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. There's no such rights for animals. This is why government wants you to be defined as animals. And it turned out we've had people contact us from England and also either Australia or New Zealand. I never remember which one it was. They reviewed their own country's drug laws, and they reported to me that those drug laws are also based on the presumption that the people are animals. This is probably a fundamental cornerstone, a building block for the New World Order. In the New World Order, you will almost certainly be deemed livestock on the global plantation. People have made these kinds of descriptions in the past, but very few, no one has found evidence of it until now. You know? They say, oh, yeah, the government wants to treat us like animals. Well, we know that, but we don't expect to find evidence. Yeah, it's there. It's there in the definition of drugs, definition of medical devices. That's what we found so far. They presume us to be animals. Point. This is dangerous. This is genocidal. We have a government that is arming itself and trying to disarm us. We see evidence. Close to 200 million people died at the hands of their own government in the 20th century after they had been disarmed. It's happened in 8 or 10 different instances. The Soviet Union and Germany and Rwanda, and I don't remember the rest of them. A nation is disarmed, the government starts killing its own people. Our government is trying to disarm the American people, and for little or no reason. And they're at the same time arming themselves. It's the sort of thing that causes people to fear the government. And here in the Pew Organization research, we discover we're not alone. That's important information. 53% of American people feel personally threatened by the government. A majority of the people feel personally threatened. You are not alone. You are in the majority. 75% don't trust the government. Those of you who don't trust the government, you're not some extremist. You are in the vast majority of the people of this country at this time. And it's important for you to understand that you are not some extremist. You're not some isolated nut. You are in the majority. And the reason it's important you understand that is because at a critical juncture, at a point where we might go into a serious conflict with the government, it's important for you to understand that you are in the majority. You're not just some little isolated individual. Right? Who can be easily overwhelmed. You are part of the majority of the American people that the government can't handle if push comes to shove. And knowing that you are part of that majority should give you confidence to stand up, speak out, and if necessary, fight. You got to know that. You don't want to be the only guy fighting the government all by yourself. Nobody wants to do that. Some people will, but nobody wants to. But when you find out, well, no, wait, I'm part of 75% who feel pretty much the way I do. I'm part of the 53% who feel threatened by the government. I'm not alone. I am part of the majority. All of a sudden, this should encourage you to stand up in public. You can speak in public. You can send out email. You can host your own blog. You can get hold of a radio program. And you can begin to express your concerns and your ideas confident that the majority of the people know what you're talking about, confident that the majority of the people agree with what you have to say. And with that confidence, you are more inclined to stand up and resist tyranny. Now, government, of course, wants us to believe that the almighty government is so powerful that there's nothing we can do. You can't resist the government. The almighty government, yeah, you can. Yes, you can. With the numbers we've got, the government doesn't stand a chance unless government can convince you that you are weak and helpless and impotent and you have no chance. Government can demoralize you. And con you, deceive you into thinking that the government is omnipotent and you are powerless. If they can conceive you, if they can deceive you into that idea, well, then the government can win. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to use the evidence from the Pew Organization research. Again, 53% fear the government right now and 75% distrust the government to show you, no, wait, you're not alone. You're in the majority. And I'm doing that because I believe if you can get that idea and you can overcome your fear and you begin to realize that the ideas you have are the ideas that are shared by a majority of the American people, you can stand up and resist government at what may be a very critical moment in American history. On the other hand, if you succumb to the government deception that the government is all-powerful and you have no chance, then you lose by default. You won't even take the field because you're afraid that you're the only one. There's the government, the almighty government. And they've got 11, it's a football game, and they have 11 guys on the team, and they're big bruisers. And you're afraid that you're going to have to walk out onto the field and you'll be not only outnumbered 11-1, but they're much bigger than you and you don't stand a chance. There's no way you can defeat those 11-1. The truth is they've only got 11. If we can get somebody to step out onto the field, somebody else might follow. And then someone else and someone else. And before you know it, we've got 11 guys playing for the government football team and we've got, 200 million. Playing for America's football team. The government is badly outnumbered. It can't win this in a head-on competition, but it could win if we are deceived into fearing the government, if we are deceived into thinking the government is more powerful than it really is, if we are deceived into thinking we are all alone. Get the idea that you're the only one fighting the battle. That's a lonely and scary proposition. On the other hand, you begin to realize that there's millions of people out there that agree with you. And if you'll stand up and take a certain amount of risk, you might be surprised to discover there are millions of people who may say, yeah, count me in. Count me in. I'm willing to go. Huh? We touched on this a little bit on yesterday's program, if I recall correctly. There are a number of radio programs that sell fear, and it's a very effective sales pitch. People, for whatever reason, are drawn to it. People are telling, oh my God, the sky is falling, the earth is coming to an end, we're all going to die. There's nothing you can do. Fighting the ever-powerful government and so on. It works. People fall for that on a regular basis. I don't know why, but they do. We talk about the problems, again, we talk about the problems that we have on this in this country. And we do a certain amount of doom and a certain amount of gloom. I won't say doom, but gloom. Right? Got problems. Got with capital, capital T, and that rhymes with T, and that sounds that stands for trust, or who knows what it stands for. But we have trouble in this country. We have serious trouble now, and more likely more coming at us. But we try to communicate the idea that you are not helpless. You can take care of yourself. You can take care of your family. You may even be able to take care of your community if you are willing to stand up and do something. Not advocating violence. We're simply advocating resistance. If you think the government that's headed your way is tyrannical and treasonous, you can't hide from them. You're not going to be able to. Some of you may hope you can just hunker down and maybe they won't notice you. No, they're going to notice you. And they're going to notice your children and your grandchildren. And if you don't want your children, grandchildren, to live under tyranny, dictatorship, despotism, fascism, now is the time to stand up and stand up with confidence because you are in a majority. I'm Alfred Addisk. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'll be back with Melody on Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Money, money, money. Money, 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 always sunny.